Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Be a team as this is. Through 2 weeks, Kansas City is minus 205 in yardage differential. The opposition has outgained Kansas City by 205 total yards. So for as explosive as an offense as these guys are, the defense is a problem. They're giving up 508 yards per game. In addition to that, Eric Berry, who has not played at all this season for the Chiefs, missed practice again on Wednesday. It is unlikely Berry goes Sunday. That is a key component to the Kansas City secondary. The more I dig and the more I look, I'm starting to see a few guys very quietly in Las Vegas positioning themselves to take the 49ers. The belief system is that this line is inflated. You're paying a premium for Kansas City because you've seen two blowouts. But look deeply into the blowouts. And the Chargers rolled up more yards. Steelers rolled up more yards. Conversely, people are a bit down on the Niners. Why? 30-13 lead in the fourth quarter. They had controlled that game, but a bad 15-minute stretch left a lot of people looking up and just seeing a final score where the Niners failed to cover the spread against Detroit. Don't be surprised. Final picks coming tomorrow. Don't be surprised if the Niners keep this game a lot closer. There are a lot of guys in Vegas I've been talking to who are eyeing this game up, waiting for it to get to seven. That doesn't necessarily mean they win, but we've spent a week talking about how great Kansas City is. I'm not sure we haven't gone too far. I think we may have jumped the shark a little bit here. I think there's going to be more opportunity than meets the eye.
So it may not be a detonation of a Potomac bomb, as you have said, or a Potomac bomb with Pat Mahomes.
What would you call it, an atomic bomb? It's not the Potomac River.
No, it's Pat Mahomes, so I didn't know if we were going Pat Mahoma, a Mahomic bomb, or I didn't know exactly how we were trying to break that down. It's interesting you mentioned that.
You tried to get the last name in there, too. That's pretty savvy.
Well, I thought that's where you were going with it, so that's immediately what I thought of.
It's too much. I like to keep it on the surface.
Certainly.
Pat, Atomic, Potomac.
It works. Either way, if you can avoid that detonation, then you have a great chance of keeping it within one score. And for me, the anatomy of that game for the Niners is Matt Breida. Much like Lo Neal, who once was leading the league in rushing after 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Somewhat inexplicably, by the way. I don't think a lot of people would have thought you would have been leading the league after 2 weeks, and people wouldn't have thought Matt Breida would be leading the league after 2 weeks. Hopefully it goes better for him in game three than it did for you when you broke your ankle, but the 49ers need to give him the ball, Lo, and that's my big key. Keep the ball away from the Potomac bomb and allow Breida to do what he's been doing, which is eat.
How would you like to respond to the mush you just put all over Breida?
Exactly. I mean,
I'm just trying to bring it full circle, Coach, because
the fact that you can draw that correlation, that it plays that well, him leading the league in rushing after 2 weeks, Breida doing the same thing, very unknown, and then Lo ends up getting injured. It's nicely done.
No other show in the country can go that route.
No.
With a guy who led the league. I don't believe you led the league in rushing again at any week throughout your career.
Yeah,
so that was a great time for you.
My average, I think I was averaging in 2 weeks about 10 yards a tote.
Let's take a trip down memory lane.
Backing up Chris Miller in Atlanta, Wade Wilson now starting for the Saints. And Wilson's team got out first. Saints first play from scrimmage. Rookie running back Lorenzo Neal takes it up the middle, gets stopped, but he is not down. He comes out of it somehow, and he's off to the races. Can anyone catch him? Well, maybe Dion, but, you know, he's off playing with the Braves. Bruce Pickens finally gets there, but it's too late. A 74-yard touchdown, 7-0 Saints. Could Jerry Glanville be thinking of flying Dion in via helicopter, TJ?
See, that's part of what's wrong with the world. That's part of what's wrong with the world.
I agree with you.
It's a beautiful run that gets no attention. The whole focus is on a guy who isn't even on the team at the time in Deion Sanders. The whole time, because you ran into the middle, you kept the legs churning, the defense kind of like forgot about you, and then you busted out and took off.
Yes.
And the whole time, Rockin' Robin Roberts is on there calling the game, talking about Deion. Well, she's more loving on Deion.
Yeah.
And they were showing clips.
Will be thinking of flying Deion in via helicopter season?
They were showing clips of Deion, so they cut from your run to Deion playing baseball and then back to your run.
Yeah, didn't even get the full highlight.
Right. They still had Deion.
They were running out of time, that's why.
Pickens was like a 4.340, okay? So everyone's already talking about Deion, the guy that was trying to catch me. Go look at his speed and where he was at. That was a hell of a run by the big fella. And it wasn't like he stopped. He was coming to get me. I was able to hold him off. I'm looking at the Jumbotron, and I'm putting it down. I'm like, get him up, put him down. Turnover, turnover, turnover. And I got to the corner, and I knew he was right there, able to dive in the end zone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he kind of, but that's 74 yards. That's a long way to hold off the corner.
No doubt.
Him. I mean, shoot, I had to be stepping. The big fella used to get him and put him down.
Do coaches or older players give you a heads up on the idea of looking at the scoreboard while you're running? Or is that something that just comes naturally? It's an instinct?
Yeah, man, you're rolling, right? And you're running and you see the end zone. And all of a sudden, you're going to see that scoreboard. And you see yourself and you're like, okay, form. Okay, get them up. Okay, and then you see the people coming behind you. You don't want to look back because you're going to slow down.
Right,
you get
of course.
Snapped. So you just say, okay, concentrate. Okay, focus. Boom, I got this. I got this. And you stay smooth. And if I knew that the screen was there, so I started angling. So I'm making him chase me even further. And I was like, get to that corner. Get in this end zone, big fella. Thank God I made it.
Can anyone catch him? Well, maybe Deion.
Maybe Deion. Even Deion couldn't have caught you on that play, Coach.
I wanted it too bad. He would have got close to me. I would have stiff-armed that little guy.
That's a pretty good point. He wasn't a huge fan of contact.
No, he tell you that. They didn't pay him to tackle. He'd pick the ball off. He didn't want to.
I always just assumed if you're staring up at the screen, you could end up tripping yourself or just. I always found that to be much more of a challenge than I think most would. Really, in reality, you're just kind of staring up a few inches, so it shouldn't be that complicated for a world-class athlete.
Right.
But I look at guys doing that. I'm like, man, how does he not fall down? Man, how does he not break the wrong way? Like, if the guy's coming in on a certain angle, I could see myself breaking into the tackle and getting hit. And then you get up, it's like, what happened? It's, oh, man, it's objects in mirror appear closer
than
they appear.
Joe, you're overthinking.
That's the thing. I've always watched guys do that, and it's like, oh, look at them watching themselves. Man, that's complicated. I don't know why I find that to be such a challenge.
And which side's the camera on? Because if I go left, do I go into him? I'm totally with you. It's like, is that a mirror image? Or?
I mean, you see me, everyone in this garage backs in except me. I'm the only one that just plows right in head first and then gets out. And then any other employee that works here that sees it is like, what are you doing? That's not how you do it. Don't worry about how I do it. How does it affect your life?
Right, you got your system down, man, and that's my system. I had an opportunity. I didn't have the opportunity a lot to look at the screen. You know, I did it again, and you know, when I played against New England Patriots, I went, I think, 69-yard touchdown, you know, K5. I caught it that time, dude.
Nice.
And I went down the sideline.
Wait, you actually ran that play that play was run a second time?
Yes, Joe. Yes, it was. And I went 69 yards on that, too.
Did that one happen before the infamous one, or was it after?
It was before. It was before.
So you never told that part of the story.
Yeah,
that the first time it happened, you caught it and went for a touchdown.
Yeah.
Second time cost you the playoffs.
Thank you.
According to
wow. According to sources.
I mean, according to him, because when you really lay out the domino effect of it, it's.
It did. It really did.
No, it didn't. Come on. There's like 18 steps you have to connect to get to that point.
No.
I'm sure there's another game you lost you could have probably won.
That was with New Orleans. You had a 69-yard touchdown reception. I'm just looking at his game log again.
You know, he validation. You know, Mr.
I bookmark it.
Well, God forbid you'd be off by a yard.
Exactly.
No. I just wanted to know timeline-wise where it happened in relation to the big drop on K5. And this happened in his third year in New Orleans, his third of 4 years with the Saints. So,
yes.
Obviously, pre-bad K5, this was good K5.
Yeah, it really
years
was.
Before.
Yeah.
That play was still around.
In New England, too, on the road. In New England.
Yeah, somewhat meaningless game, but it's a big play nonetheless.
Was it late in the year?
Oh, it's all right. They're having a bad year. It was back in the years of the brown bags over the heads in New Orleans. They're brown bagging it.
I'll throw one more positive nugget out there for Niner fans this weekend. All right? The Kansas City Chiefs played their first two games on the road. So they will open at home, play their first home game in week 3. Teams that have a home opener in week 3 against a non-divisional foe, right? So they're not playing the Broncos, they're not playing the Raiders, they're not playing the Chargers. Teams that open at home in week 3 against a non-divisional foe are 20-45-2 against the spread. 20-45-2 against the spread. So process that for what it's worth, but the situation for Kansas City is not nearly as impressive as many make it out to be. The Eric Berry injury, the overinflation of the line, the historical data that points to it. Obviously, the Jaquaski Tart injury is going to be something to monitor. Barrows joined us a little over an hour ago at 7 and said that's something that needs to be watched because if he can't go in the secondary, you need all hands on deck here. Now, how does Richard Sherman get utilized in the most integral of ways to help slow down this Kansas City offense? That, a full breakdown, and Greg Papa coming up next. Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Hey, all you early risers out there. 95.7 The Game is live and local at 5 a.m. with the pregame show. Matt Kolsky helps kickstart your day with some sports talk, leading you into Joe, Lo, and Dibs at 6.
If you're a Giants fan, you should be rooting for the A's right now because it's fun. At least somebody around here is doing something worthwhile.
Don't miss the pregame show, weekday mornings from 5 to 6 a.m. on 95.7. The Game. Joe, Lo, and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Greg Papa in about 12 minutes at 8:30. It's your boys, Joe Lo and Dibs, here on 95.7 The Game. A reminder, the fantasy heads in the house, Brad Evans is going to join us at 9:10, a little under an hour from now. He's taking all of your questions, so we will load up the phone lines if you want to get down. We'll keep it short, we'll keep it sweet, but if you fire away, the GOAT will answer your question. So, the Niners head to Arrowhead this weekend. It is the home opener for the Chiefs. Teams opening at home in week 3 against a non-divisional opponent are 20-45-2 against the spread. That is good news for San Francisco, but in order to get home after 60 minutes in the Midwest, a lot's going to need to break their way. Offensively, we can get to that in a second, but Richard Sherman is having a tremendous season so far. Opposing quarterbacks have only thrown at him 4 times. They've completed just one pass for 18 yards. Remarkable work. How do you deploy him this weekend, though? You're not going to send him around the field to shadow someone like Tyreek Hill,
never
would you?
Have. He's never have. He's always played one side. People always talk about, if you watch him, Richard Sherman, when he presses, he's great with his hands. He knows how to stand in front of the guys. Watch him on his bell technique, where bell means that at the right before the snap of the ball, you start belling and backing up. Watch where he's at. He always has his back to the sideline. And what he does is he opens up Joe and Dibs, and he's keeping the receiver in front of him, but only giving him a one-way go. So he never gets beat. Go watch. When a guy's trying to run that go route or that BT, the bus ticket, or get out of here, he never gets beat to the outside because of his bell technique and how he bails. He keeps his back to the sideline, and he's always widening. So guys can't get on and step on his toes, and usually receivers want to set you inside. And then once you jump inside and overcommit, that's when the receiver takes off and goes outside. But the way Richard plays, he bell technique, so he's staying off the guy enough that they can't get to the outside. So he takes them away. So he takes that route away. So now you got to do underneath, you got to do seams, and he usually can recover because he has great technique. So that's what Richard Sherman, I watch this guy, you study this guy, watch the tape on him, that's what he does well. And then when he's playing press man Dibs, what he does, he's so good with his hands and his feet, they keep him out of harm's way, meaning the fact that he stays in front of the receiver and he forces the receiver to try to run through him. And as long as he does that with the 5-yard technique, he's okay. So just that timing disrupts the quarterback. That's why a lot of quarterbacks, they look that way and sees because of his technique, they can't get on him. They're doing all this stuff and it kills the play. So the quarterback comes off of Richard Sherman quite often because the disruption of what he does in the press man and how he disrupts the receiver and his bell technique, they can't work their moves on him because he's belling and he's keeping the outside shoulder until it's back to the sideline. So the moves don't work on him because of his bell technique. That makes Richard Sherman a hard guy to go against.
I think the only pass that's been completed against him, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was Stephon Diggs.
15-yard comeback.
And it was exactly like a triple move. He ran out, he faked like he was going long, and Richard finally turned to run with him, and then Diggs broke it off and came back. Like you said, it was a comeback route, and Sherman was a little bit turned around.
Yes.
And they made the completion. But to your point, of all the techniques he uses, the one thing that scares me, though, Lo, is what if guys just run straight by him down the field? Is it because his bail technique is such that they won't be able to be on the outside of him and therefore the safety will be able to come over and help?
And that's exactly what he does. He funnels it to the safety so he gives them a shorter distance to run. And watch when his bail technique, he's kind of gathering and he's not letting them. They don't run and eat up the cushion. He's bailing so fast off that they can't run up on him and get around him outside. So that's what makes his technique pretty good, in my opinion. And then he funnels them to the safety, like you're alluding to. So he's got pretty good technique. There's the other guys you worry about, but they're going to try him. They're going to go at Richard Sherman, and you should. And I think when you have that many weapons and that much speed, you got to definitely throw some balls that way.
Let's talk Ruben.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking corned beef, Swiss cheese, sauerkraut,
nice,
Russian dressing.
Nice.
Well, I'm
nice.
Talking Ruben Foster. He's back this week. And we spent most of the week talking about the Chiefs, the Potomac bomb, and everything that comes with that Kansas City offense. Well, if you're going to counter on defense, you're going to need to counter first and foremost with speed, with technique, and with scheme. Ruben Foster, what are reasonable expectations? First and foremost, are we going to see 55, 60 snaps out of the former first-round pick?
Absolutely. If this guy doesn't get 10 tackles or more, they lose this game. I mean, the game's not close. I really believe that this guy flies around. I think he's going to be on Kelce at times, a tight end. I think you're going to see in-and-out coverage. I see both these tight ends, kind of both these two linebackers, bracket coverage. One's going to take the back. The other one's going to be on the tight end, especially if Tart can't go. Look for Ruben Foster to come out here and have a big game. He's got to play big. You're playing against one of the fastest teams on the grass, one of the fastest teams in the NFL. They've got a quarterback. They got receivers. You got running backs. So Ruben Foster is going to definitely get some man-to-man coverage with Hunt, Kareem Hunt, the running back. Without a doubt, you're going to match him up with guys like that. You don't have to go nickel personnel when they do certain things, because you can say, look, I can keep a linebacker on the field because you know that Warner can cover the tight end, and you know that Foster can cover the running back. So it's a good that you don't necessarily have to take a linebacker off the field and usually put in a safety to help guard a tight end. So this helps the Niners, and especially it helps them being able to tackle Kelce and be able to Warner 6'3", so he's able to jump and he has the physical presence with him as well.
Monday morning's headlines today. What do we say about Ruben Foster?
I think it's Foster shows rust in his return to action, because it will have been 3-4 games since he played. Because remember, he didn't play in the fourth preseason game because he got hurt. He got hurt in the third preseason game where he didn't play a ton. So I think you're going to see some rust. I don't think that you're going to see him for more than 50 plays. Lowe is talking about 55, 60, or what percentage of the defensive snaps. I think he'll be closer to 70-75% of the snaps, because Elijah Lee's been playing pretty well as well, and if you have Malcolm Smith, who is finally, knock on wood, going to be available for your 49er team after 18 straight DNPs.
What a debut.
But he's going to debut, and if he does debut, you're going to throw him out there for a dozen or so plays just to see what you finally have. So I think Ruben's going to play 75%, and my headline is Ruben shows rust. I'm Stephen Langford.
The difference between Ruben Foster and a Khalil Mack, that was nice.
He doesn't like it back there. I'm sorry, Stephen.
You needed to get him. The difference between a Ruben Foster and a guy like Khalil Mack is going against a tackle, and it's lined up, and those guys are going to be exerting a lot of energy. They're going after it. He's got one job, and that's to get after quarterback and play the run and do all those things. When you're playing inside linebacker, you're not going to get as winded as a pass rusher. You're not hand-fighting as much. You're dropping in coverages. You're sitting. You're reading. You're playing sideline to sideline. You're understanding that. So I don't see him being that out of shape, because he's been out there going to some fields, and I guarantee you the Niners have had a trainer. They didn't get a trainer that's training him. He's been doing different things. No, it's not football, but I really believe this guy does play a little bit more snaps than that, and it's totally different than a pass rusher.
He needs to wreck somebody in this game. He needs to wreck shop early and send a message. He is the team's tone setter.
Yeah.
Now, I get some might say, well, no, it's Richard Sherman, or no, it's DeForest Buckner. Sherman's a cover guy. He's not going to light someone up. Now, if he does, and he very well could, I'm not saying he can't, he's just in less situations. He's more focused with running than he is hitting. Meanwhile, Buckner's clogging up gaps. His impacts are going to be more low impact than anything else.
Yes.
Foster needs to wreck someone early in this game to send a message to that offense that you're not just going to rush up and down the field, throwing 40 and 50-yard bombs here and there, beating us. He's got to get involved. I don't know if it's Kelce. I don't know if it's Hunt.
Those
I don't know
two.
If he comes off the backside and wrecks Mahomes. But one way or another, early in this game, Ruben Foster needs to fly to the football and wreck somebody. This defense needs a tone setter. He's that guy. And if he sends the message early, you quiet that crowd. You talk about it all the time, how dangerous Arrowhead is. It is right up until they start to realize things aren't going their way. Remember the Tennessee game in the playoffs? They had this long drought going back to Montana where they haven't won a home playoff game. And they choked against Tennessee, and you saw the crowd just get sucked out of it.
Yeah.
They're expecting a monumental performance. Imagine being a Kansas City fan. So far this season, you've looked around the league and you've seen Denver. And they're 2-0, but they've got Case Keenum and you probably don't necessarily fear them that much. You look at the Raiders, they're 0-2. And you think to yourself, all right, we're not going to have to worry about much there. You've seen the Chargers go 1-1 and the only wins over the Bills. And the thought process is probably same old Chargers because we took you down in week one and we hammered you on your home turf. Meanwhile, as a fan, you've heard about Mahomes all offseason. You know all about the hype coming out of Texas Tech. Your team traded up for him, and you've watched his first two starts take place on the road where he's thrown 10 touchdown passes. You are coming to Arrowhead Stadium with very high expectations and a whole lot of excitement. If someone on that defense, and this is where Reuben Foster comes into play, wrecks some shop early, sucks the wind out of that crowd on third down, and Garoppolo goes out there and takes advantage of a defense that is giving up 508 yards per game, dead last in the NFL, you can start to bring those people down from that little alcoholic buzz they're going to be rocking in that stadium. You can quiet them a little bit, but it's going to take a lot of precision. Reuben Foster's got to go out there and wreck some shop. I want to see that more than anything else. I don't care if they're form tackles. I don't care if he's on the field 58 plays. I don't care about whether or not he hits the B gap versus the A gap. Wreck somebody. That's what you are. You're the guy that sets the tone.
And I want to see he and Fred Warner kind of in that Wonder Twins role, you know, where they can just go side to side and crossing each other, going back and forth. And if the ball carrier goes left, you're going to see both of them there finishing up the play. If the ball carrier goes right, same thing, because Fred Warner has speed very similar to Reuben Foster, and he's been comfortable now playing in that role. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the two of them playing side by side, particularly covering Kelce and other running backs coming out of the backfield, but also on the run game and how they can try and slow down Kareem Hunt.
I think the headline reads, the Niners may have found their next Bowman and Willis. I think that when you look
two at for these, one, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah. You look at these two guys, the foot speed, their ability to cover. Before Bowman got injured, could cover, pick six, do it. Patrick Willis could do the same. You have those type of guys in these two backers. They both are long, they both can cover, and they both can run and play sideline to sideline. I'm with you, Joe. I'm in the same camp. Reuben Foster's got a
same
set the
tent,
tone.
Same camp?
Same tent. He's sitting on my lap.
And, you know, I'm not so sure. I don't really like camping. I'll take a hotel, please.
Brokeback Mountain. And this is something where he's got to go out there and he's got to say, either I'm going to miss full speed, but I'm going to try to kiss Hunt. There's going to be times where Hunt is doing the flare screen. They're doing things. They're just back. You want to get the ball out to him in space. You got to bottle him up, and Reuben needs to have that shot, and he needs to fire it. Whether you miss, it doesn't matter, but he needs to hit him and set that tone, sort of like Whitner did that day when they played against the Saints. When you do that, and now you send that message throughout that other team in Kansas City, and they need to do the same thing to the tight end, Kelce. You do that like Jacksonville did, took away, you know, Gronkowski, beat him up, hit him, and hit him often and physical, and make him get his head on the swivel. If you can do that to Kelce and you start hitting him and banging him, and then I'm telling you, those guys start looking around, they start hearing those footsteps, they're going to be a little susceptible of getting those little alligator arms, Dibs.
The old alligator arms. That's great. Great description.
The Greg Papa Report is brought to you by Gelati Construction Company, celebrating over 100 years of teamwork, solutions, and excellence. Greg Papa joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Pop, all your years calling games around the National Football League, tell us about Arrowhead Stadium. Where does it rank in terms of hostility and crowd noise?
And the home of the Chiefs. who started that? The Baltimore Orioles fans do that. The home of the O's.
I love it.
I don't know who started it, but I love Arrowhead. It's by far the best stadium in the NFL of the originals, partly because it was built 1 year before my hometown stadium was built in Orchard Park. Rich Stadium, Ralph Wilson Stadium, whatever you want to call it. They were all together. 72 was Arrowhead. 73 was the one in Orchard Park. 74, 75, one of those years was Giants Stadium. And Arrowhead was just so far ahead of its time. And they actually built Arrowhead right next to Royal Stadium, now Kauffman Stadium, the home of the Royals. And it's just an amazing sports complex. They call it the Harry S. Truman Sports Complex. Give him hell, Harry. And the original plan called for a rolling roof to be placed between the two of them. And they would just, I guess, hit a button and the roof would, if it started to rain over a Chiefs game, they just put the roof over like an umbrella. It was way too costly. But you think about the mines back in 1972, it was a very much futuristic stadium. And the top deck, there's this, the architecture, the way it angles, it's great. It was artificial turf forever and ever. They went to natural grass. They put a lot of money into the renovation of Arrowhead Stadium in recent years. No one's talking about tearing it down and building a new one like they, you know, did with the place in New Jersey. So it's a great stadium. That's just the stadium, and I've been through every inch of it. The visiting locker room sucks. It's very, very small, but it's old. It's, you know, it's built in 72. They have a terrific Chiefs Hall of Fame on the concourse level where you could actually be watching the game and looking at a bust of the great Bobby Bell or Lenny Dawson or Otis Taylor, Ed Podolak. I mean, they great, great franchise, great history. You know, one of the real significant franchises in the history of the AFL that brought the NFL to the height that it is. And then the fans, they just, you know, they get there early, they barbecue. Whenever the Raiders came in on their buses because they were the mortal enemies, you'd see a, you know, blue-haired lady flipping her sausages on the grill, flipping the Raiders off when they came in. It was classic. But, you know, it's all red. Everybody wears red. You smell it. You hear it. You see it. There's just nothing like Arrowhead Stadium.
And the fans are going to be pumped up for this one, the home opener, and an offense that looks pretty state-of-the-art. Mahomes, 10 touchdowns through two games. If the Niners are going to be able to shut down this Chiefs offense or slow this Chiefs offense, where's the weak point for Kansas City, Pop?
Oh, man. I don't know. I think the key to the game is they're going to have to think about getting away from their staple defensively, which is a cover three, where you have one single safety high and Jaquaski Tart in the box. I just think you've got to shut the run down with seven. You cannot put eight. Otherwise, you're too stretched out in the back end. You can't deal with this extreme speed. Getting Reuben Foster back will help immensely do what I'm talking about. I think he and Warner can handle this in the front. They've got to dominate it. Their offensive line is good. It's not great. Kareem Hunt is a really good back. They may run all over you, and you may have to bring an eighth guy down. But if you're playing with one safety high, I just don't see how you cover it all. You know, teams are staying away from Richard Sherman. The Kansas City Chiefs don't have to do that. They've got speed on top of speed. Tyreek Hill, you know, the guy in Cincinnati, John Ross, may have run a better 40 time, but nobody has more functional speed than Tyreek Hill. His change of direction, his broken field running ability, he's a punt returner who they've turned into a wide receiver. He runs great comeback routes. He's difficult. And I heard Lowe talking about Travis Kelce. You have to treat him like a wide receiver. I don't care if he's in line in the Y position or if he's detached. You've got to treat him like a wide receiver. And the way the Raiders played him, actually, you know, in that crazy Thursday night game last year when Derek threw the winner to Crabtree at the end, they put Bruce Irvin over him and did exactly what Lowe's talking about. They just pummeled him. So when he's in line, you have to hit him and hit him hard. But then you may have to have somebody waiting behind him. When he's detached, you've got to treat him like a wide receiver. I actually think the best matchup on the field is Richard Sherman for him. But I'm not sure, you know, you want to designate Sherman to him. You can't do that. And they don't play match man. They're not going to do that because you got so much speed and Sammy Watkins. So really, they do not have a glaring weakness, Stibbs. The quarterback is young. He keeps his head up and his eyes downfield, but he is young. And I think you have to try to go at him a little bit to force some errant throws, because if he has a, you know, clear pocket, he's going to sling you apart, and they've got receivers everywhere. And then Andy Reid does the best. He's embraced the newfangled college offense in the NFL, I think. He was ahead of the curve years ago. Remember he hired Chris Ault, who invented the pistol at Nevada years ago? And I'm, what the hell's he doing there? Just to teach him how to run the pistol. He has Brad Childress on his staff. He's left now and joined Nagy in Chicago. But what he was doing, he was the spread game coordinator, spread offensive coordinator. They just embraced it. Wow. So they've been doing the jet sweep forever.
Yeah.
And now they got two guys going in simultaneous opposite motion where they'll have, you know, Tyreek going one way, the back going the other way, and the quarterback flips it up in the air. The Niners ran that, you know, on Sunday with Breida and Dante Pettis, but they're very difficult. And when you get paralyzed in the noise and you make a misstep, they can embarrass you.
Yeah, and that's why those Ormstead and Thomas, when they start that motion, those guys got to get wide nine. They got to be really wide and try to keep everything bottled in. You're absolutely right. If you let them get to the perimeter, it's going to be tough. You're talking about Kelce being detached on the line. Of course, guys got to beat him up when he's in there at the tight end position. But when he gets detached from the line, can Warner play on him? 6'3", here's a guy can run pretty fast. And then you put a safety. We know Tart may be hurt. Do you put him over the top? How do you handle that? Or do you go put a safety down there right away? Or do you think they have enough linebackers and enough foot speed to stay with him and then put a safety over the top?
I mean, you're talking about what they would do in man, and they just don't play man. They very seldom ask their linebackers to man up on. I think Warner, you know, looking at Warner's tape from college at BYU, that's what he did. He played slot corner.
Yeah.
They had this position in their defense called the flash, and I thought he could be a safety in the NFL. He could be a slot corner. These guys are extreme speed. It'd be difficult, but he could do that, but I'm not sure you're going to ask him to do that. I think the X factor here is the health of Malcolm Smith. If Malcolm is fully over his hamstring and he has complete ability to move, and he's got to be able to run, you got to run fast, can't pop it again, and you got to change direction because Kelce is football functionality fast. He's not just a straight line fast. He moves well. The guy played quarterback at Cincinnati, so he knows how to get open. He knows the passing concepts. He's a brilliant player. He's hard to tackle. So if you wanted to get a little extravagant with him, kind of like a box and one in basketball, you would designate one guy to him. Malcolm, I think, could do that. You know, we saw him do that as a Raider. He was okay at it. He wasn't great at it. Tart can't do it. There's nobody else who could do it. They typically don't do that low, and they probably won't. And they'll just drop into their hook zones and try to get quick and rally up and run through and tackle. But if you wanted to get creative and try to match him, the health of Malcolm Smith could be a huge X factor for dealing with Travis Kelce.
Greg Papa joining us here on 95.7 The Game. How bad is the spot for the Raiders in Week 3? It's a Monday night encounter with a physical Rams team. Then you've got the short week at altitude in Denver. Then you've got a turnaround for the early start time in the heat and humidity of Miami, Florida. That's going to be difficult for any team to overcome, is it not?
Yeah, it's hard to play. The Raiders played in Miami last year, but it was a Sunday night game, and it rained, and it was a whole different environment. It was later in the year. Going there has been hard for the Raiders. I remember the year Al died. That's where the linebacker went AWOL on everybody, went to his grandfather's funeral, and it was a terrible loss. It really kind of, I think they were 7-4 going there and wound up 8-8. John Gruden, I think the first game back after 9/11, we were in Miami. Who was it? Jay Fiedler? Somebody jumped in at the end to score a touchdown at the gun. I think it was Jay Fiedler. But it's a hard place to play, especially early in the year. Miami does not wear their Aqua home uniforms until November, I think, so they make you go there and sweat it out. They'll make the Raiders play in black. I think this is an early season game that is huge. You got Cleveland coming in the next week. I think they're dramatically improved, but you're home. The Denver loss just gnaws at you. You should have won that game. You were up 12-0 and 19-7. And you just mismanaged it and didn't play well. Gary Conley couldn't make a tackle at the end. You wound up losing a game. You controlled the entire game and should have won. So that's a hard one. It's the elements are there, but I think the Raiders have the ability behind that big offensive line, the middle of the offensive line, and I think it's obvious what John wants to do. He wants to run power with Marshawn behind the left guard, the center, and the right guard. That's where the expense is of this team. And maybe you can wear him down. I haven't really analyzed Miami closely to give you a full, opinion on how good they are or not. But everything you said, right, is correct, Joe. This is a hard game early in the year. You got to travel today or tomorrow. Today's Thursday. Travel tomorrow and then, deal with the whole thing in South Florida. It's a difficult early season game. It's why Miami, has a great home advantage early in the year.
Forecast is for 88 degrees and 75% humidity, which would be probably pretty nice. You'll probably be happy.
For that part of the country, that time of the year, that's not bad.
No,
normally you get those 90-90 days.
Yeah, this might be an 85-85, but we'll check come game time. John Gruden said, Pop, that it's tough to find a pass rusher, and it's also incumbent upon them to teach one and develop one. Who on the team that they currently have is most likely coachable to the point where he can be an impact pass rusher.
Oh, no doubt, Arden Key. I mean, Arden Key is the quintessential body type to be, at least as a, you know, right away in the NFL, a nickel sub-package edge rusher. Then, you know, can he put on weight and be able to play in the base and give you enough downs to really be one of your guys? But I think over time, but he's, you could see in the preseason, he's very, very young. You know, he's rushing in practice over Colton Miller. You got two rookies, you know, rookie teaching a rookie. You would have liked to have Donald Penn healthy there a little bit to get him, you know, better reps. But as far as what John's talking about, you know, the Chicago Bears, it's not just Khalil. And we talked about that on Tuesday after his, you know, wrecking the game on Monday night, is you can build a whole defense around a guy like that. You see what Vic Fangio's doing, bringing blitzers behind him. Those guys go in untouched. If you just stacked, say you had Irvin on one side, Khalil on the other, and you put Arden Key right behind Khalil Mack, Arden Key may lead the league in sacks, or he's going to have a lot of pressures. He's going to have a free run. He's an unblocked, you know, free hitter on the quarterback. So when you have a special talent like Khalil, you can build an entire defense around him. So, again, I just don't understand John's thought process on the pay scale. I mean, look down the roster. I'd take Khalil over probably any of the two or three players you want to name on the roster. And, Kelechi's a great player. But left guards are there. People like Khalil are game wreckers. They are incredibly valuable. I just hope at some point we're going to start talking about this. I think that's why John decided just to say uncle, and on September the 1st, just get him out of here because he wanted it to go away. This has turned into a nightmare for him because he's playing so well, and he's obviously not going to go away.
Pop, before we let you go, excited or not excited over the news that Maroon 5 would be the halftime of the Super Bowl?
Didn't they just do it?
It's a great question.
Or did they do the pregame?
Yeah, they did the pregame. That was Coldplay that did the halftime. Another milquetoast band of white people.
So Maroon 5's doing, are they doing it alone, or are they going to have other artists around them? Because sometimes they announce that first, and then, you know, some bigger names may show up.
They have a hit currently with Cardi B, so you can imagine that Cardi will sashay out at some juncture.
Yeah. My level of excitement on a scale of 1 to 100 is a Maroon 5, Joe.
That's just genius.
Greg Papa with us here on 95.7.
They can't get anybody better. I mean, I'm not opposed to Maroon 5, but, I mean, they can't get a bigger name to do the Super Bowl halftime than that.
You know what? Side note. What do you do for the Super Bowl? Do you watch it at home? Are you out working? What do you generally have going on?
I mean, it depends. I mean, some years I'd be up in Tahoe skiing or... it depends where I'm going. I used to go to Las Vegas a lot. A bunch of my friends from New York would go there. But the problem is you don't pay attention to the actual football game.
Nothing wrong with that, Pop.
So it varies year to year. And also, you know, I got the chance to call one. That didn't turn out so well. But it varies year to year. I wake up the morning of the game and I figure out what I'm going to do like I do every day.
What do you say we all go to Vegas this year?
We could do that. Lo, you down?
I'm down to get crazy with you, Papa. Let's get crazy, crazy, crazy.
There it is. Greg Papa with Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Thank you very much, Pop.
Super Bowl's where? Atlanta this year? I'm definitely not going to the game this year.
Yeah. Vegas it is. We'll see you there, Pop. We'll
have
take
a good
care of the
day,
reservations.
Boys.
Yeah, we got a hookup at a casino off-strip, if I'm not mistaken. Lo, you can get us all set up with rooms down there.
Oh, Ellis Casino. It's a small little dive place, but absolutely. I can call my guy and get us some rooms and... They got a great hot dog down there, too. They do some great stuff down there at Ellis Casino.
They're known for their hot dogs.
Could you imagine the Bay Area? Like, all jokes aside, you and Pop, two of the most recognizable and beloved individuals in the Bay Area when it comes to Bay Area sports, Bay Area media,
no
all
doubt.
That good stuff. The idea that people probably hold you in such high regard to see video surface of you two at Ellis Island Casino on Koval, a block behind the strip, slumming it.
So great.
How would that be received?
Social media sensation.
Papa holding court at the bar next to the $1 blackjack table.
Lo, you down?
I'm down, Pop.
It would be like when they did cribs, but they went to Redman's house. And Redman didn't have a crib. He was still living in the hood.
Yeah.
And he went in and he's like, here's my entertainment center. And it was like a Nintendo 64 and a PlayStation and an Atari, like all tangled up just on the floor, like any frat house would have.
You know what I like about Ellis Casino, though, guys? I mean, people there, they don't care if they don't have any teeth or if they got one teeth and they call them, you know, the Toothless Wonder. They're just happy people, you know. They gum you to death. It's just a great place.
See, you threw a lot of facts out, and then you used the word great, and I just... I find myself conflicted over what you just laid out for me. Yeah, they might not have teeth, but life is great.
They get it. They're happy.
Is it eating pudding and applesauce with every meal? No wonder you like it so much. Everyone there's eating soup all day.
That's right.
Oh, you sound two capital of the world right there, baby.
That Papa Drop already is going to be a thing. Hit it one more time.
Lo, you down?
I'm down, Pop.
Good. It's really good.
Down with OPP?
All right. Speaking of audio, it's every time. It's over under when the Khalil Mack questions and comments stop for John Gruden. And we can answer in a second, but again, yesterday, Gruden meeting with the media says this.
Coach, you look around the league and a lot of teams are looking for pass rushers. Why is it so hard to find a pass rusher and what are those qualities that make them work?
It's hard to find a great one. It's hard to find a good one. It's hard to find one. You just said it. You know, college football now, they're not really dropping back to pass and throwing footballs anymore. They're throwing laterals and they're throwing bubble screens and they're running read options. So you got to train these guys. It takes a little bit of time to learn how to rush the passer. And we got some guys that are in that process right now.
Lo, describe something for me. It's not a trick question. In relation to where you're sitting, where's your cell phone?
Right in front of me.
Right in front of you. Anna, where's your bottle of water?
That'd be to my right.
And Dibs, where's the mouse to your computer?
It's right to my right, Joe.
Would you define those objects as difficult to find?
No, I got it right here.
Is it because they're directly in front of you?
Correct.
Yeah.
Like Khalil Mack was with John Gruden in the Raiders when he arrived. So again, could you hit the audio and could we hear the beginning of Gruden talking about great pass rushers?
Coach, you look around the league and a lot of teams are looking for pass rushers. Why is it so hard to find a pass rusher, and what are those qualities that make them work?
It's hard to find a great one.
No, it's not.
It's hard to find
a
good one.
You can stop. It's not. It's actually not. It's actually not when you take on a job that has one right there. It's not. It's actually the opposite of hard.
Especially when you're a broadcaster for that very league, and you've been watching each and every team for the entirety of this player's career.
It literally couldn't be easier than the situation you walked into. You walked into a situation with one of the two best pass rushers in the league. He's a defensive player of the year. He is the definition of great. So it's not hard. It's not hard. Yet, these comments continue to come out. Is he just trolling us now? Is he having fun with us? Because I am enjoying this so much more than I should be. And
no,
not because
not.
It's...
No, you're not.
I love this. I love it because it's just... It's so... I'm wondering how long this is going to go. How long are we going to continue to ask Gruden about Khalil Mack, and how long is Gruden going to continue to say these things about the pass rusher
position? Well, he's pretty much saying uncle. He gets it. Khalil Mack's not coming back. We understand that. And here's Gruden here saying it's extremely hard. And, you know, he had one, and they chose not to pay him for whatever reason it might be. I look at this as it's absurd when, you know, you hear Gruden say that when he had arguably the best pass rusher in the game. Now you got to hopefully Arden Keith and some keys that some of these guys will grow up and these guys will start playing. You hope that, you know, you got a guy that you Bruce Irvin's that's, you know, getting pretty good healthy penny. You hope these guys show up. But right now it's just interesting because once the media asks him the question, he goes, man, it's hard to find one. You know,
these it's hard guys, to find a great one.
They don't rush anymore.
Just listen, Gruden, it's hard to pay a great one.
Okay.
That's your line. It's hard to pay a great one. That's what you want to go with. And then it's, oh, okay, yeah, you're right. You're right. It was really expensive to keep Mac. And we can fall back on that narrative of it's very difficult to have two players making 20 or more million per year, at least this year. It won't be next year and beyond.
Right.
That narrative's dead after one season. But that's what you fall back on for this year because it's hard to find one that is not true. That's actually false. We proved it. Dibs, again, where is your computer screen?
It's right in front of me, and the mouse.
Shocking.
The mouse is right here.
Can you find it, though? Can you find it, even though it's right there?
I gotta have it in case I need to play, a variety of things. I need to know where the mouse is.
See, here's the PR lesson. Just start making jokes about it. Just fully open yourself up to it. Embrace it. I would come out and I would start breaking down Khalil Mack games in Chicago. Now, I know there are rules about whether or not you can talk about players on other rosters, but I might just come out and read his stat line. And see who picks up on it, and then just move on. Were you referring to Khalil Mack, as you know,
can't talk about players on other rosters. Well, you know, how difficult is it to find a pass rusher? I mean, well, sometimes you don't know you have a great thing until it's gone. Everyone laughs. Yeah. And then, you know, it's the Bay Area media. It's not New York. They're not going to come at you. Disarm them. Say a couple charming things. Make jokes. Self-deprecation. And suddenly, you know what? Nothing to see here anymore. This is kind of old. See, people love to watch the rich, the famous, and the powerful squirm. We love that. We love seeing the guy with the 10-year, $100 million contract get worked up over the Khalil Mack trade. Start showing people it doesn't bother you. Your life is better than this. You have a great contract. You have a Super Bowl ring. People love you. You are a great broadcaster. You don't need to deal with all this. Yet, somehow, we get these sound bites every day. It's fascinating to me.
But, Joe, you look out, every major network has got 52's face up there, his big melon, his jersey sales, top five in the NFL. They love him. Aaron Rodgers hates him. Russell Wilson hates him. They hate playing against him. You saw Aaron Rodgers. You saw both those guys drift away. They understand where Khalil Mack is. Their game teams are game planning for this guy. Who are they game planning for on the Raiders now defensively? Khalil Mack is a game changer. And so when you look at what's going on, it's not just us. It's nationally. Khalil Mack is like, you know what? He's playing with so much anger. And you know what? And I think a lot of this is fueled by the Raiders. I'm going to show them. And the media who loves Gruden, who's Gruden spent 10 years up in the box, they are absolutely eating this up. It's on every show. They're talking about, look at what Khalil Mack did. I mean, it's just a direct shot at Gruden. And it's crazy because he's been in the media and everyone's just showing Khalil Mack. Every single opportunity, they're showing his plays and showing what type of game wrecker he is. So Gruden has to live with this. This is a decision that they decided to make. Good, bad, or indifferent. He is going to be forever attached to this trade. Arguably one of the worst trades ever in the history of the NFL, regardless if it didn't have the money or not, because people aren't looking at it that, whether they had the money or not. They're just looking at a superstar talent that you let get out of your
facility. And I don't think you can judge it yet as a bad trade or a good trade until you see what they do with the picks, in all fairness to the Raiders and John Gruden, because on the surface, yeah, it looks terrible because you have no pass rush and you dealt the best pass rusher in the game, but the picks you get back, you might produce two Hall of Famers. Let's just say they find the next Joe Staley, and so they got a replacement for Donald Penn at tackle, and maybe they find the next Khalil Mack, and God help that kid who has to play in the shadow of Mack being used with a pick that was dealt for Khalil Mack. But let's just say they come up with two Hall of Famers. You could look back at the trade in 10 years and say, you know, on balance, Gruden got the better end of the trade. So
I don't know. You're going to have people in the minority who try to make that case, and it'll surface. But we live in the moment, and then we move on. For example, does anyone remember Charlie Casserly? He's on TV now.
Charlie Casserly.
Charlie Casserly is on TV as an analyst. He's a former NFL general manager.
Yep, no, Charlie.
He was the GM running the draft in Houston the year Vince Young and Reggie Bush came out. Now, Vince Young and Reggie Bush were everything. They were those Heisman Trophy finalists. They met in the national championship game. Reggie Bush was straight nasty. Vince Young was filthy. And in Houston, they needed a quarterback and they also needed a running back. Both dudes were on the table. And one of them, I mean, Vince played at Texas and Reggie's from Southern California, but either pick would have appeased the fan base. And Houston sits number one overall, and they come out and they take Mario Williams, the pass rusher out of NC State, I want to say.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yes.
So they take Mario Williams. People go nuts. I don't remember the exact order, but Reggie ends up in New Orleans?
Yes, Reggie get drafted.
He started in New Orleans, and then Vince ended up with Tennessee. And I don't know who was 2 and 3. But after that, it took only like half a season or so. Casserly was fired very quickly thereafter because everyone crushed the trade. Everyone said, what a stupid move. You need a quarterback. You need a running back. Reggie Bush is transcendent. Vince Young is going to be a superstar, and he's right there in your home state. How can you be so blind? All these years later, who was the best of the three? And it's not even close.
Not even close.
It's not even close. Reggie had some moments, but Mario Williams was wrecking shop for years.
Yep.
He put together the best career. Vince Young completely washed out with one decent season,
yep.
And Reggie Bush was very hit or miss. He could not handle the regular workload. Yet, nobody ever looks back and gives Charlie Cassidy credit for that and says,
right.
He got it right. He got it right. Everyone crushed it and ended up down the road costing him his job, and no one's ever gone back to say, Charlie, you had it right. We're sorry.
Yep.
That's the thing. Gruden could end up hitting on these picks, and someone might notice, like
yeah.
I just did, and you'll say it on air, but no one's going to care.
Slight difference, though, if Gruden is still here, then he will get the credit, because if it's a 10-year contract, and this is the first real thing he did, if he's around when these guys actually do materialize, then he would get the credit. But otherwise, you're probably right. He'll get the Cassidy treatment.
If you're Gruden, you're flying planes with banners telling people you got it right. You're doing everything. You're spending 50 of the 100 million on PR and marketing to let everyone know you got it right. It's the only option you have.
You're playing with the banner. That's
all right.
Great.
Brad Evans, Yahoo Fantasy Sports, taking all your questions next. You can start lining up. It's going to be about 10 minutes. We're going to come back much sooner than that to talk more football. 888-957-9570. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Lowe, you down?
Jerry Rice is the greatest of all time, and you can only hear him right here.
Jerry Rice in a foot race, and Rice is going to get in for the touchdown. Big play by the big receiver.
Don't miss Jerry Rice on Joe Lowe and Dibs every Monday at 8 on the Bay Area's football station, 95.7. The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.